Hello, welcome to the Writing Lessons From blogcast. Here at the Stinky Little Blogcast, each week I take a story, a TV show, a film, a book, a podcast, anything that tells a story, and I break it down to try and find the creative writing lessons that we as storytellers can use, the good, the bad, things that we can learn to improve our writing craft. The first three episodes of this blogcast, of which this is episode three, have been old articles that I am recording from the Substack project that I did. But soon, as in next week, as in episode four, is going to be brand new article, brand new blogcast. And it's then going to go alternate weeks. So next episode will be brand new. And then the one after that will be an old one. And then brand new, old. You know how that works. You understand how that works. And that'll be just then until I run out of old ones to record. How are you? How's it going? I've been looking at my branding for my romance books. And I will also kind of have another look at the branding for my fantasy books. It's been a long time since I did all of that. That's on my to-do list, which is connected to this and what we're doing here in a way that, yes, every week is about the writing lessons from. That's what this thing's called. But I am going to do every now and then something a little bit different, because I think that obviously the craft writing is one of the most important parts of being a writer, whether you're doing it for fun or whether you want to make a career out of it. If you do want to take it further, then there are lots of, you know, major stages in all of that. So like the technical side of actually getting your work out there, but also building a business, marketing, which all falls under the umbrella of finding your readers. And that is so incredibly, incredibly hard. So there will be future episodes that won't necessarily be a writing lessons from, except they will be, but they'll be author business lessons from whatever. I've actually forgotten what I called it, but they are coming. I can tell you that much. This week, we're looking at Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem. This one is a special one for me. I've been a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles since I was about 4 years old. Technically, we were born in the same year. The Turtles have been through so many iterations, from comic book to cartoon, to live action movies with Jim Henson studio designed heads, to more cartoons, an animated movie, my personal favourite, more cartoons, graphic novels, two more live action movies, those are the Michael Bay ones, which aren't actually as bad as you think, more cartoons, and now this animated movie. Mutant Mayhem had a lot to live up to, mostly because Seth Rogen, self-confessed Turtle fan, was part of the writing and producing team. The fans expected him to make something beautiful and with respect. To have 40 years of character development at your fingertips and a massive fandom with high expectations sounds incredibly overwhelming. Did they succeed with Mutant Mayhem? Personally, I don't think so. But on the other hand, yes, they did. Here's the disclaimer. If you are a TMNT, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, fan, and you haven't got around to watching Mutant Mayhem yet, you might not want to read on until you've cracked open the popcorn, turned off the lights, and watched this film with bated breath. I watched this on Paramount Plus. Given what's been going on in the news recently, I wouldn't touch Paramount Plus with a barge pole. But when I watched this, and I wrote this over a year ago, there was a 7-day free trial, which is how I managed to watch this film for free. However, last I saw, it had come onto Netflix. So if you haven't seen it and you want to go watch it, try Netflix first. If you have Netflix, if you support Netflix, you know, stick to your own values, obviously. But from this point on, there be spoilers. First of all, let me say that the animation of this film is beautiful. Beautiful doesn't even cover it. The animators deserve pay rises and awards. As always, we're in New York with four Teenage Mutant Turtles and their father, Splinter, a mutant rat. They're living in the sewers and were transformed into the wonders they are by ooze. Yes, that's the technical term. Ask any turtle fan. I almost nearly broke into song then as well. Just be very glad that I managed to hold that back. As with most turtle stories, the boys want to go up to the surface, but Splinter is adamant that it's too dangerous. They decide that if only they can prove to the surface world that they're good guys, then it'll be safe and they can be normal teenagers, go to school, have friends, maybe get girlfriends. That is the driving force behind their actions. They must prove that they're not scary monsters so that they'll be accepted. But how? Enter April O'Neil, who in this iteration is a black teenage girl, and she is incredible. In fact, I think she is my favourite part of this whole film, and I have never said that about a Turtle film before. April wants to be a reporter, of course, when she grows up, but she's got a bit of a fear about being in front of the camera. That's not stopping her from searching for the hottest scoop, and scoops don't get much hotter than mutant turtles. The turtles and Splinter weren't the only creatures to come into contact with the ooze. There's a collection of other characters gathered from 40 years of turtle lore, including the infamous Bebop and Rocksteady, all led by Superfly, a mutant fly, obviously, voiced by Ice Cube. Superfly has been shunned by humans who are terrified of him, and he has decided that the only payback is to turn every animal into a mutant to give them dominance over humans, which is fair enough. If the turtles can stop him, and if April can catch it on film, then this could be the answer to them getting into high school. Who's going to tell them what a nightmare high school is? Let's talk about those 40 years of character development. I've skirted the issue long enough. We now know who what we're dealing with, so let's do the biggest lesson any writer can learn from this film. You've got a massive fandom to please, new fans to attract, and 40 years worth of character development to play with. What do you do? Would you stick to the known and loved characters? Would you attempt to start from scratch? Given that there are 40 years of character development here, it's probably easier to go back to basics and 1986 to the first cartoon's classic theme tune. I am not going to sing it. Absolutely not. But, you know, you can sing along in your head or out loud. Up to you. Leonardo leads. Donatello does machines. Raphael is cool but crude. Michelangelo is a party dude. Obviously, there's more to them than that, but that's the foundation for each one in every iteration since the beginning. And it starts off well. Leo is indeed our leader, almost. It wouldn't be Leo if he didn't have some trouble leading at the beginning. It's Leo's character arc in every iteration. What was lovely is that they made Leo the turtle who fancied April in this one, with the added depth of him being the brother who most wanted a girlfriend. It adds a little bit more heart to the otherwise logical, strategic Leo. Donnie does machines, but in other iterations, he's also a scientist. In the 1990 and 1991 movies, he has the interest and passion, but fails to hack into computers and follows a scientist around, hanging off his every word, because he's 15. By the time we reach the 2012 cartoon, Donatello can do almost everything himself. Until Mutant Mayhem. Yes, he can drive, but only because he plays video games. What are the others doing in the sewers all day? Yes, he has a smartphone attached to his arm and some other gadgets, but he doesn't really use them much. In Mutant Mayhem, Donnie doesn't really do machines, or much else other than suggest that he's a nerd who could do these things, but for some reason doesn't. Good, lovely, angry Raph. In the animated film TMNT, which is my favourite, it's explored how he carries the weight of the world on his shoulders. He's got attitude and rage and a deep desire to do what's right, although with more violence than Leo would like. In Mutant Mayhem, his attitude and anger is shown through him shouting a little at the beginning, and then Leo giving him permission to shout during a fight scene. And that was it. On to the party dude. Did Mikey eat pizza in Mutant Mayhem? Yes. Was he fun? I guess. He had some flair, but none that made him stand out much. To be honest, all of the turtles, with the possible exception of Leo, were a little 2D. They were a tad flat. Possibly, dare I say it, undeveloped. Which feels impossible, given that the writers have 4 decades of material to work with. When I mentioned this to someone, they suggested the possibility of the writers wishing to start afresh, targeting a new, younger audience, which is fine. It's certainly a creative decision that can be made. Personally, I don't understand why a screenwriter or production company would choose to alienate a generation of fans with disposable income, though. More importantly, if they did make that creative decision, what did they envision the turtles were doing in the sewers for 15 years? Sure, many of those early years would have been spent learning to talk, being educated by Splinter, and then taught ninjutsu, and practicing so hard that they become heroes in a half shell by the tender age of 15. Turtle power! But what about the downtime? Historically, the turtles' lair has been filled with games and pizza boxes, TVs, weights, a drum kit, guitars, a dojo, more computer screens than one Donatello could possibly need, maybe even a science lab. It's more than plausible to think that four teenage brothers would have niche and unique personalities carved from being bored out of their minds, entertaining themselves and each other, and only socializing with one another in the sewers for over a decade. There's so much fun that can be had with that when character building. Why didn't the writers of Mutant Mayhem jump all over it? I do have another theory. That the writers didn't give the turtles the attention they deserved because of the 40 years of character development. We know who they are, so they put their focus on April, Splinter, and Superfly instead. Because the writers did prove that they could create good, well-developed characters. April, as I've already mentioned, was brilliantly written. Splinter felt different in the best possible way, and his story merged beautifully with Superfly's. Which brings me to the plot lessons from Mutant Mayhem. The origin story was changed a little for this film, and my favourite changes were the reason Splinter feared the surface world, which also fed into Superfly's experiences, and therefore the overall plot, which is a writing device we should all be aware of. There should be connections, mentioned at the beginning, that come into play towards the end. My other favourite part of the altered origin story was that Splinter and the Turtles learn ninjutsu from YouTube. Honestly, I would have preferred the 1990s origin story of Splinter learning the martial art from his old master, but what a way to modernise a franchise that started in the 80s. When I was chatting to another TMNT fan about Mutant Mayhem, they asked me if the plot was the same old story. April or Splinter get into trouble and the boys have to save them. And I stopped. I'd been so focused on the 2D-ness of the brothers that the plot as a whole hadn't occurred to me. No! Mutant Mayhem is not the usual Ninja Turtle story. The turtles don't save April or Splinter. Instead, the writers turn this turtle trope on its head. April and Splinter work together to save the brothers. That is genius! It works with the idea that we're reverting back to these 15-year-olds being actual 15-year-olds. They're kids! Of course their dad is going to save their shells. Mutant Mayhem is about the brothers growing up and wanting to be accepted. But they're at the beginning of that journey. They're going to screw up. And in doing so, Splinter, who is often overlooked, is given a proper character arc for once and given the chance to grow. This is hugely important and exciting. The ending is also brilliantly done. Instead of choosing to stay in the shadows of the sewers, as the turtles usually do, the boys get their wish and they're accepted into high school as heroes of New York. They even get to go to prom. It's a nice twist on what the fandom would have expected. And the joy with twists when using a story and characters that are so well known is that we're going in a whole new direction, which means anything could happen. Your characters make a story. I was so bothered by how little I sentimentally fell in love with these specific four turtles that I completely missed the subtle plot twists. Perhaps not much would have changed had the boys been given more depth, other than a quickening of the heart rate and the desire to buy Mutant Mayhem on DVD and add it to our vast TMNT collection. Plus, you know, some better dialogue and better use of Donatello's skills, as well as more conflict between Raph and Leo, the usual. But maybe that's why they didn't do that, because it's the usual. The thing is, after 40 years of character development, the four mutant turtles work. We know who they are, what drives them, why they argue, and what will bring them back together. Sure, you can tweak parts of it, that's where the fun lies. But you shouldn't try and fix what isn't broken. Instead, you should focus on the joy that already exists. Will I be adding Mutant Mayhem to my collection? Nope. Confucius says, forgiveness is divine, but never pay full price for late pizza. I will see you next time for episode 4, a brand new writing lessons from blogcast and article. If you want to sign up to the mailing list for writing lessons from, you can head on to writeintothewoods.com, W-R-I-T-E, intothewoods.com. But actually, the easiest way to do it, as you're already listening to the blogcast, is to just go and hit follow, hit subscribe, whatever the lingo is for wherever you're listening to this. And then it'll be there, episode 4, next week. And I will see you there.